You're listening to The Sports Rabbi, hosted by Josh Halichman.
All right, we're back with the Sports Rabbi, Josh Halichman. Welcome aboard to the Sports Rabbi Show, Holy Land Hoops, where we bring you the best of Israeli basketball, all the way up north to Nehariya, down south to Elat, and all the great cities in between Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, and many, many more. And if you like this podcast, and I know that you do, make sure you subscribe to us, leave us a five-star rating, write us a nice review, listen to us, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to your podcast. Also, check us out on social media at the Sports Rabbi, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, sportsrabbi.com. For the latest and greatest news, both in English and Hebrew, we are the only website in the Holy Land that brings it to you in both languages. Lots of stuff on thesportsrabbi.com in English and Hebrew. Tons of articles, opinion pieces. We're talking Maccabi Tel Aviv. We're talking Hapoel Jerusalem, Israel national soccer team. Lots of stuff going on. But today's program, we're going to focus solely on Hapoel Jerusalem and their absolute disastrous, unmitigated disaster of a BCL campaign that saw them crash out of Europe after an absolutely brutal, brutal, brutal defeat. I don't know if people in the basketball world have gotten over yet, which saw the departure of head coach Ilias Katsouris. Less than 24 hours after the loss, Jerusalem has to figure out what they're going to do, what they're going to manage to be able to take out of this year that still has a state cup and, of course, the league championship. But there's going to be a hell of a lot of work ahead for the team and whoever is going to lead it. To talk all about the Reds, Hapoel Jerusalem, we're bringing on a Hapoel Jerusalem lifer, a fan. His name is Ari Roth. Ari Roth, of course, a season ticket holder for Hapoel Jerusalem, lives in the Holy City, has been around the team for almost a decade, and knows pretty much, you know, what's going on behind the scenes. We'll see in this conversation, but he has a good handle on Hapoel Jerusalem, and the team, the players, and we're going to have a conversation about what went wrong and what's going to have to change for the Reds. Ari Roth, how are you doing today? What's going on?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you so much for having me, Josh. It's a real pleasure. And I have to say, you know, you give that introduction about the only site that has Hebrew and English content on Israeli sports, and it's really true. And that's basically how we got acquainted, if you remember. I had a friend who ran a Facebook page, had like 15,000 followers at the time. Now I think he's up to like 90,000 or something, because obviously there's this big wave of Israeli pride from Jewish people all over the world. So I was very briefly a member of the basketball press, which you could say only in quotations if you define it very broadly. And that's how I believe I met you, got exposed to your content. And you say I know all the ins and outs. I think that's largely because of you, and you know, you have access to the players and coaches and stuff like that. And those insights are key for me as a fan.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Hapoel Jerusalem, 87 points. However, they give up 98 to Pinar Karshiaka, the Turkish squad. Two Turkish teams take out two Israeli teams 2 weeks in a row, of course, after last week's Beşiktaş taking out Hapoel Tel Aviv. Hapoel Jerusalem, let's talk a little bit about what went on the last couple of years. Alexander Jikic comes on board as the head coach 2 summers ago. Takes the Hapoel Jerusalem team to the State Cup championship. He then takes them all the way to the final. They defeat Tenerife in the semifinal, but fall just short to Bonn in the final of the BCL. And from there, you know, there's a little bit of retooling and rebuilding. And we figure we're going to go into a season where Hapoel Jerusalem already had the upper hand on Maccabi Tel Aviv, winning the Winter Cup. If we all remember that, I'm sure. Ari, do you remember that they won the Winter Cup over Maccabi Tel Aviv at the drive-in?
I definitely remember that, but I would be lying if I said I paid much attention to it and you know, thought that was a big deal. I think most Israeli fans are with me on that one.
Yeah, but it still is a big deal. Anytime you beat Maccabi Tel Aviv, and you know, the talk even after that is, Jikic still has Maccabi's number, they're going to have problems. And then lo and behold, on October 5th, the sports rabbi sitting in Yad Eliyahu before Maccabi Tel Aviv's season opener in the EuroLeague against Partizan Belgrade. I get to sit with Coach Čikić for half an hour, and we're just shooting the breeze and talking about all different fun things. Who knew that 2 days later, the world that we knew was going to be tossed upside down with October 7th and the Hamas attacks. But Čikić, of course, and the rest of the team leave the country. Čikić does not want to come back. He does come back for a little bit. The sirens go off. Eventually, he is a mutual parting of ways between the coach and the team, along with one of the assistants as well. The team itself lost one player in Morrison Dewar, who we'll talk about a little bit as well. I know that you feel he was a key. I tend to agree with you as well. That was a fairly big loss for Hapoel Jerusalem in the main scheme of things. Were there issues with the construction of this roster? Yes. Were there issues with, the way everything was handled from 40-point losses with only Israelis and some, foreigners thrown together at the last minute for Israeli League games? Yes. Shia Larchik and Theodosius Giannakopoulos, the answers, assistant coaches, the head coach. Once Čikić left, we knew that they were going to bring in a head coach. They bring in Elias Kantsouras, who right off the bat, Ari, I got to tell you, the first thing that goes into my mind is losing by 40 when you're coaching AEK in the decisive game 3 against the same Bold Jerusalem in the arena. That to me was already, why are you bringing in a head coach that got splattered in this arena? It's just something didn't sit well with me right off the bat with that. Kantsouras, got to speak to him numerous times, nothing too much in depth, was always a gentleman. I think that was the general sense, Ari, of the people around the club, that he was a good guy, a very nice person. Basketball coach, on the other hand, I'm not so sure. I also know he was put in a position that it's very hard to succeed. We saw Paul Jerusalem fail with the same, almost identical situation a number of years ago with Oded Katsas left the Panathinaikos. And we see that, Adomaitis comes in, and it was just a unmitigated disaster. So
I'll be honest, you know more about the European coaching market than I do. My general philosophy in sports is very zoomed in on the teams who I'm focused on. So I don't even pay that much attention to Maccabi except for when they're playing Hapoel. So my perspective on that whole thing was, listen, obviously we lost Čikić. He was the center of the team, the man who built the team, the man in whose image the team was built. Mm-hmm. And you're put in a difficult situation. The assistants did an okay job once all the players came back and got comfortable with the situation, once things calmed down a little bit after that initial wave of the first part of the war. And I think that the club was put in an impossible position because they had to do something. They knew that the expectations around this team were through the roof after last year. We'll go into a little bit about that. And they had to do something. I think that the narrative, even if the results would have been exactly the same with the assistants just taking the reins and staying that way until now, would have been extremely different than it was now, because while Kantsouras clearly in retrospect was the wrong guy for this job, at least they did something. And for the fact that they got blown out by 40, Ike did in the arena last year, that was a wild, wild atmosphere to be as part of, as you well know. Oh, yes. But that was an extraordinary atmosphere that you don't see even for top 16 games in Europe.
It was highly charged. Like, I mean, there was also the anti-Semitism aspect and the crowds. I mean, it was a highly charged matchup. There's no question, but just something didn't sit well with me, that the coach was unable to prepare his players properly for that atmosphere. It was clear that they were not prepared for it.
100%. I like to think of myself as someone who prefers good process to good results, because I think good results tend to follow good process. Obviously, you can get lucky with the results sometimes, even if you don't have good process. Other people might have the opinion that I'm a bit of a contrarian, but the way that this plays out ultimately is last year, when everything was going so great in everyone's opinion, and the results were obviously tremendous. Jerusalem takes the State Cup. They go to the final in Europe, everything like that. after every game, I'm like in the WhatsApp chat with my cousins who are also hardcore Hapoel fans. And I'm like, I don't know what's happening. Every game was going down to the wire. We were winning by a possession or two. And it just seemed like, you know, there was a horseshoe up someone's behind, or they sold their soul to the devil, something like that. And I was just like, how long can this possibly go on? And everyone is like, why are you being such a party pooper? You know, everything's amazing. And this year, it's like the exact opposite. Obviously, as you said, you described it as sort of like an unmitigated disaster in the BCL. I don't know that I would categorize it that way, maybe given the expectations, maybe given the fact that they started 3-0 in their group in the top 16 stage. Certainly, we expected them to advance.
Well, yes.
From that perspective,
I mean, when you're up 3-0, it's an unmitigated disaster if you lose three straight and not qualify, and with the amount of point differential that they did have, also to not qualify is a disgrace. I mean, yep. It's an embarrassing disgrace. If you're a bold Jerusalem fan, I'd put my head into the sand. I mean, I'd be the ostrich and I'd go right straight in. I mean, like, this is embarrassing. It cannot happen. And you have to remember, they beat Tenerife by a ton, and they look terrific beating Tenerife by a ton. So it's not like all of a sudden they just went down the tubes. It was just, you know, things just happened so oddly. I mean, the whole situation, look at them in the league play, losing to one team after the next and then getting blown out by Hapoel Tel Aviv. I mean, did you really think going into this last game that the result against Karsiaka was going to be any different? I think that we all had a hope that, well, you know, they're going to turn it on, right? And you heard the quotes from both Yovel Zussman and the coach Ken Souris. Like, I see from the practice that everybody's keyed in and blah, 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 and just wasn't there. On one hand, the players and coach did not throw either side under the bus, which I have to give credit to both of them. Back in 2017, Curtis Charles threw Fotis Katsikaris right into the bus with us before a key Euro Cup game, and then afterwards in the locker room as well. He was more than happy to throw the Greek head coach under the bus back then. But that was Curtis Gerrals and, you know, Terrence Kinsey and all those, Jerome Dyson.
Well, that didn't work out too well for him, but it's interesting that you bring up that season, because to me, this season was very reminiscent of that 2017 season with Simone Pianigiani at coach, or rather the previous season. So if you remember back that season, Jerusalem wins their second Israeli League championship with, as you mentioned, that core of Gerrals, Jerome Dyson, Terrence Kinsey, Richard Howell, Yotam Halper, and Lior Eliau. They lost. Everyone remembers that season like it was the greatest thing since sliced bread, but they lost 14 games in the regular season in the Israeli League.
And they were down 2-0.
From missing the playoff Elyon.
And they were
nobody remembers that because of the results.
And in the quarterfinals, they were 2 games down.
To Nahariya, if I recall correctly.
I mean, there was the winner shot in game one. Game two, I went up to Nahariya. They were down 0-2 after that. And, I mean, you were already ready to put a fork in them, but... Listen, Piaggiani and, you know, the leadership of that team pulled it together and they won three straight and then went off to win the title. You know, again, Piaggiani.
The point is that offseason, they basically said, this team just won the title. There's no way we're changing anything. And again, to me, this goes back to process versus results. That team, for the vast majority of the season, was not a great team. They put it together in the end. They got hot at exactly the right time. And thank God for that. You know, I'm very happy we have that championship. Flags fly forever. But at the same time, you want to build for the future. Past results are no indicator of future returns. And if I was someone in the management at that point, might have advertised for more wide scale changes. I think the same thing happened last year. The State Cup was obviously tremendous. I was there with the brigade going crazy that game. Couldn't believe we were winning this game. I was assumed we were going to lose because it's Maccabi and Hapoel. That's what happens. But we won. It was amazing. We went to Europe. Again, all these close games that we were just pulling out and pulling out and pulling out. Finally, the magic ran out against Bonn. I think there's a reason for that. Maybe I'll touch on that moving forward. But basically, this offseason, they said, we had a great thing last season. Let's focus on continuity and just developing what we have and taking that next step forward. To me, I think that was a little bit of a mistake. I look at this roster, and there is, at the end of the day, like, they had a great system, but if you combine a great system with a go-to guy, like a real go-to guy, I think then you would have had something special rather than doubling down on what happened last year. If you look at all the teams who the past few years have given Hapoel Jerusalem problems. Joe Ragland, first for Holon, then with Peristeri. Marcelino Huertas for Tenerife, Jacobin Brown, and then even Dusty Hanna's the last game for Hapoel Tel Aviv, Eric McCollum this last game. They have some guy who's got the ball in his hands every single time. He's going to let it fly. They've got great confidence. They show up in the big moment. Hapoel Jerusalem doesn't have a guy like that. All of Randolph, Carrington, Speedy Smith, Britton Lamar, Zach Hinkins, all of them, very up and down. You can't depend on them for a real performance every single game.
Not this season. Last season, there was tremendous consistency, and there was a system that was in place. And there were a lot of important players in that system. The roster construction this year was poor. There's no question. Yep. And that also lies. It's not just the head coach. That's Yonatan Olon. And that's the, Gal Meckel. I don't know if he was involved in that as well, but, primarily Yonatan Olon. There is no backup point guard. There is no real forward. There is, you need to, and again, one of the things that Jokić did a lot of, and I really admired that, is that Mareks and Sim, Sandvene, were very important players in his system that freed up Zach Hankins to do what Zach Hankins can do and won the MVP last year. This season, he's looked nothing like that same player, though there were signs of him in this last game because he really, he really worked his tail off. You could see he was spent by the end of the game. If you really took a good look at him, when watching on TV, but if you saw a good look at him, you could see he was wiped out. He was finished. He didn't have that guy next to him that could do the dirty work. And, as much as I wanted to see Ja'Cory Williams play alongside him, and I really did, and they never tried it, but you know why? Because there was no backup center. I mean, that Ja'Cory Williams is the backup center. The roster was poor. If you look up and down the players, Oz Blazer is, not a great player. He's going to give you 100% effort, but he's not a great player. Yovel Zussman, this is what he is. You have any of two Israeli players at the same position, Yovel Zussman or Cornelius. So that is not good roster construction. Brinton Lamar is a second guard more than anything else. He's not a combo guard. He's not a point guard. He's a second guard. That's what he is. He can play alongside somebody, but that's it. And that's why they tried to bring in players like Yutai Moskowitz. There's talk that they're going to try to bring in Max Heidegger, but Max Heidegger, I got to tell you, he ain't a point guard either. He's a shooting guard. I mean, he's a guy that could score. You give the ball, you give that man the ball, and he's going to go and score. But you have to look at it this way: Levi Randolph. This is a player that won the scoring title in the BCL just a couple of years ago. He has been horrific. Now, of course, probably he's carrying some kind of nagging injury, and maybe that's part of the reason why he's not the same player that we've seen. Definitely not on the consistent wise. Kadeem Carrington, you can't automatically just slot the guy in after not really playing with the team all season long because they're trying to get his citizenship done, and that, of course, doesn't take place. And that wasn't something that they should have counted on. That was the last thing that they should have counted on, was him getting citizenship. When you're talking about the Israeli government, you can't bank on these type of things happening. You look at other issues. Of course, we know that Gabi Chachashvili's on the shelf. Dov Rat, we'll see if he'll come back. There's been talk that he is going to come back. We'll see. But listen, I don't think we're going to see Dov Rat that we thought we were going to see before the injury. Nimrod Levy is clearly not involved in the team enough. There's nothing, they bring him in, and I was kind of saying in all these press conferences to some of the other writers that, Jerusalem has all these pieces, and right now they need to play with a less is more attitude. They're rolling through substitutions, Ari, and you saw this yourself with last month. Every 3 seconds is another substitute coming in, and he's making 3 substitutes at a time. Who is doing that? What professional basketball team is changing 3 players at a time? Do you know of any?
I haven't been watching the other teams that closely, but I actually, at least in this last game, had the opposite problem. We were talking on WhatsApp, and it was clear, like you said, Randolph might have some sort of nagging injury, but he was very clearly not himself. And this is something that we've seen with him since he signed with the team, you know, a year and a half ago. He has nights where he comes out and he can't miss. And you see why he was the leading scorer in the BCL the year before. And then there are other nights where something is just completely off for him. Occasionally we've seen it where like he'll snap out of it at halftime and go back to being himself in the second half and get hot. But there are times where it just doesn't happen. We were in the beginning stages of the fourth quarter. It was still close at that point, and Randolph was basically having the ball on every possession, and he was either shooting or trying to drive in a way that was very, very predictable, and he was getting stopped every single time. Yep. And it was just clear he did not have it. I said he needed to come out of the game because it was basically like four or five possessions in a row.
Rosh Bakir, he just kept. Here's a trivia question for you. At halftime of the game against Hapoel Tel Aviv, how many combined shots did Kadeem Tarrington and Levi Randolph have?
Well, I think I only know this answer just because you WhatsApped him to me.
Oh,
I believe
did?
You said it was four.
Four, it was four, yeah. Now, now, you know, if these are your scores, coach, you got to figure out how to get the guy to the ball. I mean, yeah, can't have four shots. I mean, it just can't be. It just cannot be that these are your leading shot takers. I mean, your big players who are supposed to be putting the ball in the basket are not getting the chance to do it. Listen, the team is they're in trouble right now. I mean, next week the team is holding a symposium on Tuesday, I believe. So at the arena. So if you're a fan, and I think you can just show up there and go and hear what the management has to say. Not sure quite what they're going to say. And right now they have to figure out what they're going to do with the coaching. Now Ari Roth said right from the beginning that they should have just forced Yonathan Alon to take the job. I would have just rode with that. And why would I say that? One is Yonathan Alon has experience as a coach before. We know he's coached Jerusalem, but he was also an assistant coach for years, absolutely tons of years. Two, you're talking about a situation where there's a war. The fact that they were able to bring in a foreign coach when they did, I still find to be extremely impressive. I guess people need work, and it doesn't matter if there is a war going on and your comfort level is going to be a little bit off. So I got to give credit
to
Ken
Saras. At the time, there were sky high expectations for this team. If you come in and you take them to what the team looked like it was headed for, you know, you're the hero. I understand the appeal.
Yeah, no, 100%. There's no question. But I said, Yonathan Alon had to take this team because there was a certain way that it was built, and only the people really involved with building the club and the way the office had run and the defense was run the last year is understood by the people that are close enough to the team. So that meant the assistant coaches and Yonathan Alon. Yonathan Alon, I asked in the press conference, would you take the job? And when they were looking for coach, and he said, absolutely not, that it would be, it would be messing up the system of the club, on and on and on. Now, they put out a statement today when they bid adieu to Elias Kantzouras that the two assistant coaches will be running with the aid of Yonathan Alon. So Yonathan Alon seems that he'll be sitting on the bench. It's not 100% clear, but it's fairly clear he's going to be involved now. I guess he doesn't want to be called head coach or coach, but he's going to be involved in this. Now, will they bring in another coach at this point? I truthfully believe that it's a waste of time. I think they just have to play out the rest of the year. They could say, yeah, we have two titles on the table, but let's be honest, play the year out and then blow the team up. Bring in a foreign coach over the summer when the coaching market is open. You know, why force yourself on taking a coach? You did it once. Don't make the same mistake twice. You know, don't bring in another guy. If you want to bring in an Israeli coach, if that makes you feel good and you want to bring somebody in for 3 months and they'll agree to it, if it's an Arik Shivik, if it's an Erez Bittman, if it's Ariel Beit Halachmi, if they'll agree to take this job for a few months, which I don't know what the appeal is for them to even take such a job for 3 months. I don't think there's much appeal at all for any of these people unless they think that, well, if I do well, maybe they'll keep me on and they'll allow me. But I also don't think that they have the management has faith in those people. And I think the right thing for them to do, and again, it's not my team, it's not my money, but if I was in Matan Adelson's shoes, I would let them ride out the year. Wherever the chips fall, they fall. Start working on blowing up the team and bringing in new players. Find the head coach, because there's going to be plenty available come June time. There's going to be no lack of head coaches available, I can assure you, Ari.
Yeah, they just have to pick the right one like they did with Jokić. But this whole thing with Yonatan Alon that you mentioned is funny to me, just because we saw the exact opposite thing happen a few years ago, where there was a crisis towards the end of the season. At that point, Yotam Halperin was like the sporting manager. I forget what his exact title was. And he came down and wound up being the head coach for the rest of the season. So obviously it's new ownership. Matan Adelson clearly looks at things very differently than Eyal Chomsky and his group did. And, you know, the decision went through the way it went. But at the end of the day, I said some people view me as contrarian. I view myself as an appreciator of good process. I think despite the disappointment here, and there's certainly a lot of that, there are lots of reasons for optimism. And that starts with, as I mentioned, Matan Adelson. He's certainly injecting a ton of money, commitment to building a real sustainable organization. What happened with Yonatan Alon, besides the fact, certainly Alon Kramer came in as the CEO. He's got lots of, American sports experience. So he understands how to play to these markets and make things happen both on and off the court. I think the Jokić hiring still counts for something. It shows that at least part of their process was down there. And I think generally, we know off the court, they were hiring all sorts of marketing and salespeople throughout the war, despite the fact that there were no fans for a while. Adelson seems to be in this for the long term, and I appreciate that. I think that you can't just put together a basketball staff and assume things are going to flow. He's investing in improvements to the facilities. He's signing longer term commitments with key players that let them commit and get some sort of continuity. Again, we can talk about whether that continuity was good or bad, but it is what it is. And at the end of the day, because he has so much money, he can still get out of those contracts if he wants to. I think if Eyal Chomsky's group had signed some of these longer term commitments, he would have been stuck with them because their funds were much more limited. But I guess that's a question I have for you as someone who A, has exposure to different teams, B, has maybe had some conversations behind the scenes. Is that the direction that they're going to head, or are they going to try to buy out the contracts of some of these players who they previously committed to long term? Are they going to try to sell these players to other teams? How do you think they're going to handle this in the offseason?
Right now, it's all up for grabs. I mean, I think it depends on who they may bring in as the head coach. There are players that you may want to keep. There's no question about it. And there may be players that you just want to blow the whole thing up. You signed Nimrod Levy to a 3.5-year deal. Yovel Zussman's on a long-term contract. So those guys are going nowhere. Again, you need to have a good Israeli core within the team as well. So that is those signings are okay. Would you like to get more out of Yovel Zussman than you've gotten this season, Ari? I'm sure the answer would be yes. I think, his season has been a massive mega disappointment. But again, if you've been following him, and I have over the last few years with both Alba Berlin and Maccabi Tel Aviv, the results shouldn't be so much of a surprise. This has been...
Well, I guess I got to ask you there. As you said, you've been following more closely, both certainly in his time at Maccabi, but in his time at Alba, just as following the larger EuroLeague, which I don't typically do. Zussman, at the end of the day, when he was on Maccabi... I believe he won the Israeli Defensive Player of the Year award. So the expectation was, even if he's not contributing as much as we want on offense, and never did I think he was a go-to guy by any stretch of the imagination, but I thought, if he can hit an open three, he can play really good lockdown defense.
You need to be
see any of that. He's missing all his threes. He looks very slow on defense. Everyone's getting by him. He's not even doing the things that I thought were established.
He was horrible against the Apollo Tel Aviv. I mean, it was awful. But I think, again, I'm not in the practices with the coach. I'm not there. The players have been tight-lipped. Nobody's saying anything. I was discussing that with some writers even today. The players have been very, very careful not to say anything. They've only had positives to say. They've been really super careful. If it's, on the record, off the record, people are very, very, very careful. So again, it's very hard to get a sense of what is going on, what system. Now it's clear that, Jokic had a certain system that everybody slotted into. And it's also very clear that Kantsouras did not, maybe he used some of those pieces, but he did not on a larger scale feel that he had to, continue with what Jokic had done. And that's his prerogative, of course. It's just hard to say. When I watch Maccabi Tel Aviv, I know exactly Oded Katash, how he's going to run the first half of a game. I know exactly how he's going to run the first half of almost every single game. I know who's going to start. I mean, usually, right? Now, when things have gone well, he goes with the same starting five. That who the first few substitutes are going to be, when those are going to happen, who's going to come in. And then you kind of get he gets a feel as to how things are going. And it was interesting after their win over Villebron, they had a horrible first half where they gave up 49 points. They were losing 49-47 at halftime. And he said in his postgame press conference that he, came in with a game plan and it didn't work. And he, he had to change it up at halftime, and that he has to really take a good look at what he did wrong with that game plan, because against a better team, to say it this way, but against a better team, you're not going to get the result and a win that he did. It was very formula Katash, as you've seen, of course, when he coached Hapoel Jerusalem. You pretty much knew how he was going to run a game, correct, Ari?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that can be a good or a bad thing. If things are working, then knowing how you're doing right. It and having everyone be on the same page is great. On the other hand, we saw, you said at the beginning of the year when Jerusalem took the Winter Cup, they were like, oh, they really have Maccabi's number. I can tell you in the stands, there was tons of talk about the fact that it wasn't so much that Hapoel had Maccabi's number. It was just that Jokic was going to outcoach Katash every time. Katash would freeze up in the big moment, whereas Jokic was making the right adjustments at the right time. With Kantsouras, it never felt like he found something he was comfortable at any stage.
Agreed.
After those first few games,
he never found the rotation. And that was the less is more. He just kept throwing players out there. And you can't keep throwing players out there and hoping that something's going to click, because he just was. I sat through every game, and every 3 seconds, just another substitute and another substitute, and the players couldn't get into any type of rhythm. And that
is my only defense of Kantsouras, and believe me, it gives me no joy to defend Kantsouras after the results that we've just seen under his reign. But we talked about the injuries. It's not just Randall. Hankins hasn't had that same burst that he had last year. He was up and down the court flying. He was jumping higher than everyone. Yeah, and there was absolutely none of that this year. What do you want him to do? The MVP who you just signed to a long-term contract isn't the same guy. Randall, who is the leading scorer of the BCL, can't be depended on a day-in, day-out basis. He almost, by the nature of what was going on with the team, couldn't get a flow, because the guys who were supposed to be the staples of the team weren't the staples of the team.
I think a point that you're making there is, and I think it's a point that people really don't understand also, there's maintenance of these players. And along with Alexander Jokic, he had a very trusted person that worked with the team, but was more than a trainer. He was also an assistant coach, and he was very involved in the maintenance of the players and how they needed to be prepared for the games. When that person leaves, Jerusalem took some time to find another trainer to bring in. They did bring in, but it took them a good month afterwards to bring somebody in. And again, it's very hard. It's just very, very hard when Jokic had a specific system in place across the board, it's just very hard to replace it. I mean, there's just no, you know, there's no abracadabra 1-2-3 that's going to replace that. And, you know, listen, Conservatives was put into a position that, on one hand, you know, it's really massively hit or miss. And he missed. And, absolutely, you know, I think if you look at his track record, there shouldn't be any surprise, unfortunately, for Uphold Jerusalem and their fans that he was going to miss. We have a couple minutes remaining here. Ari Roth, of course, a diehard Uphold Jerusalem fan. Talk about what you want to see from this team for the next couple months.
What I want to see from the team for the next couple of months, ideally, I would like to see the Israelis, particularly the new ones who we signed to long-term contracts, you know, find their way. Zussman, we talked about his potential as a 3-and-D player who's not hitting threes and not playing particularly good defense. If they could get him back on track, I think that would be huge for the long-term trajectory of the team. Nimrod Levy is an interesting signing. We talked a little bit about that on WhatsApp when that happened. I've always been a fan of his type of game and him as a player in theory, meaning a big man who's going to fight for rebounds down low. He's definitely got the size. He has a soft touch. He can hit the outside shot. I guess my only question with him, and maybe you would know this a little bit better as someone who follows the entire league, but he's obviously been with the team before, so I was familiar with him with then, and his last tenure with the team didn't go so well either. So my question is it possible that Nimrod Levy is a really good leading player for a not-so-good team and
exactly,
maybe a worse fit as a cog in a better team, which is what we're trying to be?
Exactly. I think you said it right there. He is a good leading player on a not very good team. That is Nimrod Levy, and that is his style. He is a foul machine. I don't know if you've noticed that. He is an absolute foul machine. He thrives in a smaller team, and that's why he went to where he went in Turkey. It's not that Jerusalem didn't want him over the summer. They did want him, but he also looked at what would be better fit for him. He didn't succeed with Maccabi Tel Aviv, and he, you know, again, he was okay for Jerusalem. It wasn't that he was awful, but in that first, you know, that first go around. But Nimrod Levy is a good leading player on a smaller team. That's, I think,
yeah.
You, yeah.
So I think, as I said earlier, the thing that we saw repeatedly over the past couple of years is that Hapoel got exposed when the other team had a clear go-to guy, particularly a go-to guy at the point guard position. You'll notice the names I mentioned: Raglan, Huertas, Jacobin Brown, Dusty Hannes, McCollum, all point guards. They all have the ball in their hands.
Yeah.
And we need someone like that. For as much as I love Speedy Smith and his ability to come up in the big moment, he was the only one who seemed to have shown up yesterday. You need somebody else. He's also not the type of point guard who's going to like really drive in. He's running the offense, and he's good. He's a good floor general, to put it in a cliche sort of way, but he's not this athletic freak who's just going to go past you before you know what's happening and drive and kick and set up everyone for much better shots. There was no offensive flow this entire season. You know, watching Hapoel Jerusalem on offense versus any other team, it's like watching a completely different sport. It's just everything's on the perimeter, limited passing and movement, and you hope that one of the big guns can hit a shot at the end of the clock. And we saw, ultimately, I talked about the fact that, you know, those guys that we do have who were up and down, the magic ran out, and all of a sudden they weren't hitting those shots at the end of the clock. And that's why we saw what we saw at the end of the BCL season.
And the magic is going to run out here. Sports Rabbi Josh Alekman. Check us out at the Sports Rabbi Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, sportsrabbi.com. For the latest and greatest news in Israeli sports. Ari Roth, thanks for coming on board, and we'll speak to you soon.